Translation. The personality of Godhead, again desiring to give names and forms to his parts and parcels, the living entities, place them under the guidance of material nature. By his own potency, material nature is empowered to recreate. Do you all remember who's speaking at this point?
The ladies on the roof.
So the ladies are on the roof observing the personality of Godhead, and they are speaking these words of philosophy about him. So let's...
Better than the Vedic hymns.
Let's read together the translation. The personality of Godhead, again desiring to give names and forms to his parts and parcels, the living entities, place them under the guidance of material nature. By his own potency, material nature is empowered to recreate. Purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The living entities are parts and parcels of the Lord. They are of two varieties, namely Nitya Mukta and Nitya Baddha. The Nitya Muktas are eternally liberated souls, and they are eternally engaged in the reciprocation of transcendental loving service with the Lord in his eternal abode, beyond the manifested mundane creations. But the Nitya Baddhas, or eternally conditioned souls, are entrusted to his external energy, Maya, for rectification of their rebellious attitude toward the Supreme Father. Nitya Baddhas are eternally forgetful of their relation with the Lord as parts and parcels. They are bewildered by the illusory energy as products of matter, and thus they are very busy in making plans in the material world for becoming happy. They go on merrily with plans, but by the will of the Lord, both the plan makers and the plans are annihilated at the end of a certain period, as above mentioned. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita as follows. O son of Kunti, at the end of the millennium, all the living entities merge into my nature. And again, at the time of creation, when the time of creation is ripe, I begin creation by the agency of my external energy. Bhagavad Gita 9:7. The word Bhuyaha indicates again and again, that is to say, the process of creation, maintenance, and annihilation is going on perpetually by the external energy of the Lord. He is the cause of everything. But the living beings who are constitutionally the parts and parcels of the Lord and are forgetful of the sweet relation are given a chance again to get rid of the clutches of external energy and to revive his, the living being's, consciousness. The revealed scriptures are also created by the Lord. Vedic literatures are the guiding directions for the conditioned souls so that they can get free from the repetition of creation and annihilation of the material world and the material body. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita, this created world and the material energy are under my control. Under the influence of Prakriti, automatically they are created again and again, and this is done by me through the agency of my external energy. Actually, the spiritual spark living entities have no material names or forms, but in order to fulfill their desire to lord it over the material energy of material forms and names, they are given a chance for such false enjoyment. And at the same time, they are given a chance to understand the real position through the revealed scriptures. The foolish and forgetful living being is always busy with false forms and false names. Modern nationalism is the culmination of such false names and false forms. Men are mad after false name and form. The form of body obtained under certain conditions is taken up as factual, and the name also taken bewilders the conditioned soul into misusing the energy in the name of so many isms. The scriptures, however, supply the clue for understanding the real position, but men are reluctant to take lessons from the scriptures created by the Lord for different places and times. For example, the Bhagavad Gita is the guiding principle for all human beings, but by the spell of the material energy, they do not take care to carry out the programs of life in terms of the Bhagavad Gita. Srimad Bhagavatam is the postgraduate study of knowledge for one who has thoroughly understood the principles of the Bhagavad Gita. Unfortunately, people have no taste for them, and therefore they are under the clutches of Maya for repetition of birth and death. Sa eva bhuyo nijavirya choditam svajiva mayam prakritim sushikshatim anama rupatmani rupanamani Viditsamano nusasara shastrakrit. The personality of Godhead again desiring to give names and forms to his parts and parcels, the living entities, place them under the guidance of material nature by his own potency. Material nature is empowered to recreate. So it's amazing that the philosophical words coming spontaneously from the ladies watching the Lord from the roof. And for those who are engaged in devotional service, there's nothing lacking, no knowledge or detachment from the world that comes automatically. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janaya Yashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayara Haitukam. Just by engaging in direct devotional service to Krishna, then naturally knowledge, jnana, and detachment come to the soul who's engaged like that. And yasya devi para bhaktir yata devi tataguru tasyaite katita hyarta prakashanti mahatmanaha. For those who have implicit faith in the Lord and in the spiritual master, then automatically the imports of Vedic knowledge are revealed. It's not a product of mundane scholarship to understand the Lord and the conclusions of the Vedas. Rather, by engaging in unalloyed devotional service, one comes to know everything. And for the souls who are placed within the material nature and who are referred to here as the Nitya Bhadhas, there's a necessity for divine intervention for them to become saved and rectified from the influence of the material nature, because it's too overwhelming to get out by themselves. Daivihi esha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. Krishna says it's duratyaya. It's impossible to overcome the influence of the material nature. But that's the entire plan of Krishna through which he manifests the material nature. It's an arrangement so that the souls can evolve and come out of the condition of slumber in the material nature and come to their full consciousness of anandamoy, which means to be fully engaged, fully consciously engaged in Krishna service. And this goes on constantly, eternally, because it's the intention of the Lord at every moment to save his parts and parcels from the predicament that they're in. And therefore, every time he breathes out, yasyaika nishvasita kala mata valambya jivanti loma vilaja jagananata vishnur mahansa iha yasya kala vishesho govindamari purusham tamahamaja. Mahavishnu is spoken of in this verse from the Brahma Samhita, that as he exhales, then he's manifesting all the other forms of Vishnu, and the Brahmas become manifest, as we just read in the Brahma Samhita, how he comes out on the lotus flower, the conglomerate of all the souls who are wound up in the body of Mahavishnu upon his exhalation become manifest, and then they're put back to work again in the material nature according to their previous karmas. And this takes place by the will of the Lord. First of all, the material nature, like a machine, is going on. Maya dyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena konteya jagadvi parivartate. Krishna's will creates the material nature. His very glance creates the material nature, and it goes on perfectly as like a machine. And also, as the supersoul, he reminds the living entities that they had a particular kind of work in their last life, and he allows them to take it up again. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matak smritya jnanam apovanam cha. That he reminds them from within the heart that this was your desire in your previous life. And this engagement of the Nitya Bhadas is eternal. It is anadi, beginningless. It's going on since the time immemorial, or a beginningless time. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says the desire of the Lord is to save the living entities from this condition, sleeping condition, in which actually they're suffering needlessly because they don't belong to the material nature, they belong to the spiritual nature, but because of misidentification, they become implicated and they become identified with a temporary situation, name, and place. And the sense of I develops into a sense of my. And we can understand that our identity in this world is based on our my. It's based on really what we have. Mamaka, the first verse of the Bhagavad Gita. Dharma kshetri kuru kshetri samabeta yujitsava mamaka pandavaschaiva kima kurvata sanjaya. Why the whole war was taking place was because of the sense of my. Dhritarashtra was thinking, what are my sons doing in the sense of Pandu? And he was trying to edge them out of the picture. And they're interesting because of the word I exist. I'm an eternal soul, part and parcel of Krishna. But by the influence of false ego, I develop a sense of my. And I'm identified with that. For instance, I'm born in America and therefore I become an American. Why? Because I identify myself as an American. I say I'm an American, therefore I'm an American. I actually invest my consciousness in it. And Prabhupada mentions nationalism here, that someone becomes nationalistic because they think, this is who I am. I was born in this country. And I become attached to certain articles, like clothing. I have certain articles of clothing, and those are my clothes. I come to your house and sit down, and it's your house because that's how you identify that as your house. You've invested your consciousness in it. But I'm not so much invested in your house. If your, you know, a door breaks or a window breaks in your house, I'm a little concerned, but not as much as you, because that becomes your problem. It's where you're identified. Our body, our surroundings, our families, all these become our designations because we see them as mine and we identify them. But actually, we have nothing to do with those. When Prabhupada was sitting in Vrindavan and he was writing his poetry, one of the poems he wrote called Vrindavani Bhajan was about how now he's reflecting on his life, how he has gone through as being in school, then married life, have children, he had grandparents, everything. And now he's all alone by himself, sitting there only writing, meditating and on Krishna and chanting. And then he's thinking, where are all these well-wishers now? Where are they? All these people I thought were my maintainers, all the ones I thought that were my dear ones. He says, now they're just a list of names. They're all gone. They've scattered here, there, everywhere. Grandparents go, the parents go. All the personalities I identified with, these are my people. This is who I'm with. They're actually a list of names only. But I'm identified. I've invested my consciousness there, and I think this is me. This is part of me. So to rectify us of that situation, Krishna gives Vedic knowledge. Shastra Yoni Dvat in the Vedanta Sutra, Vedavyasa has written, Shastra Yoni Dvat. So Yoni means the womb. So Shastra is the womb from which all knowledge and understanding comes. Without Shastra, we can't understand anything. We have to take shelter of Shastra. Shastra Yoni Dvat means without taking this vibration from the Shastra, we can't come to our real consciousness. We can't understand real knowledge. And therefore, Shastra Yoni Dvat. And Mahaprabhu said, Maya Mukta Jivaranahi Swata Krishna Gyan. Jivari Kripaya Koila Krishna Veda Puran. That because the living entity is in Maya, Maya Mukta means he's bewildered by Maya. Jivaranahi swata. It's not automatic or swata that he can come out of that situation and have knowledge about Krishna. Therefore, out of mercy, jivara kripa, for the soul, Krishna Veda Puran, Veda Vyas, the incarnation of Krishna, the incarnation who comes to present the Vedic knowledge so that everyone can have an opportunity to go back to Godhead, has presented the Vedic literature specifically so we can hear that knowledge and come to our real senses. Just by hearing it, we become awakened to this real identity. And the essence of that is given in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, as is mentioned, as Srila Prabhupada mentions in this purport. Anyone can take guidance from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the postgraduate study of the Bhagavad Gita, and become unencumbered by the bodily conception of life and come to their real senses. One verse I was thinking of this morning, Mamchayo Vyabhicharina Bhakti Yogina Sevate Sagunan Samatityaitan Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. This is the formula for how to get out of how to rise above the three gunas which bind us in this world. And there Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Mam Chayo Vyabhicharina. Avyabhicharina Bhakti, which means unmotivated bhakti. And that doesn't stop. Mam Chayo Vyabhicharina Bhakti Yogina Sevate. So seva, by doing this service to Krishna in an unmotivated fashion, then sagunan samatitya. Atitya means to rise above. So one rises above the three modes of material nature, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, and comes to the level of Brahman. So we are Brahman. I am Brahman, but I've misidentified myself with the body and everything that goes along with the body. Deha patra kalatradeshu Atmasainyesu satsapi, tesham pramato nidhanam pashyanapi na pashyati. Srimad Bhagavatam Sugadeva Goswami says, deha, my misidentification begins with the deha, with the body. I think I'm my body. I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm a cat, I'm a dog, I'm a bug. Everyone thinks that's who I am. Apatra, deha patra kalatradeshu, and then I have connections. Like I have a wife, and then from wife I have children. Wife, children, then I have relatives. You have what else? Huh? No, one has. You don't have. Grandchildren, you have generations. People worry about these things. They think, how's my name going to be carried on? They really worry about it, right? Is it, you know, the son has a couple daughters, and then they're thinking, come on now, you know, how's my name going to be carried on? And it's a big deal. People really worry about it, as how it's going to be passed on. And meanwhile, I take shelter of this idea that my body can protect me. I see, you know, people work really hard to build up their bodies. They work out, they go to the gym, and they work out, and they look in the mirror, and they preen themselves, and no, they all the time, you know, people. And if someone gets sick, it's a long time ago, I saw in this magazine this article about this guy. He had been some champion bodybuilder. He was like huge. And then he got some disease, some sickness. And within 2 weeks, they showed him lying, you know, sitting on his bed, skinny guy, you know, everything gone. Within 2 weeks, he had reverted to nothing. His beautiful, big, beautiful body. So the deha, I want to make it strong and take care of it and all these vitamins and things like this. Raghunath Das Goswami, when he ran away from home, he was a young man. He was from a billionaire family. And they tried to give him everything because although they were devotees, they were thinking, let's not get too carried away with this stuff. They heard about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers and going to Bengal. And, you know, they were crazy for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this chanting process. And they were thinking, okay, be a devotee, but just get married, be nice, and, you know, don't go with those crazy people, you know. That's too much. It's too much. So they tried to keep him, and they gave him a beautiful wife, and they gave him all money. He had servants, everything. Meanwhile, his so-called marriage was a farce because his wife slept inside. He slept outside on the Durga Mandap, outside the door. He slept outside. And he kept trying to run away and go away from home. Finally, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed through a letter. He told him that, don't be like a crazy person. Just act like a normal boy who's interested in the business of your family and everything, and when the time is right, then run away. So he did that. And when he came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was, even though from this opulent background, he had everything available to him in life, he took some instruction from Mahaprabhu. Actually, when he joined Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's closest associate, Swarup Damodar, was there in Puri. And he said, you take shelter of Swarup Damodar. He said, from now on, you'll become the Raghunath of Swarup. You take shelter of Swarup. So he took shelter of Swarup Damodar, but he wanted to ask a question from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He wanted some personal instruction. So he asked, can I have some personal instruction? Mahaprabhu said, ask Swarup. He knows more than I do. And finally, Mahaprabhu said, you want personal instruction? I'll give you personal instruction. Don't eat opulent food. Don't dress nicely. Don't hear what other people say in the material world. Don't listen to the kinds of things that come up in this world where people are eager, as Prabhupada says, they're making plans. Everyone's got some plans, even the birds. They do. They have some plan. There's a mockingbird in my backyard. Not right now, fortunately, because he drives me crazy. All day and night, he's up there doing his little dance and things like that. And at first, I thought it was a little charming. You know, he knows about 50 different kinds of things. Even a frog, he can do rivet, rivet. They imitate everybody. Then I was looking in the encyclopedia about the mockingbird and said, oh, this is a mating dance. And I thought, wow, you're just trying to attract a mate, you know, like everybody else, some, you know, mundane thing. And I thought, would you be quiet now, you know? It was annoying after a while. So everyone's going on some kind of plan, some kind of noise they're making, advertisement. Why? So they can build a nicer griha and getting more than they need, collecting all this money, starting big business and everything like that, atyahara, over-collecting. So he said, don't be like these people. Don't listen to what they say. Eat really simple food, wear simple clothes, and in your heart of hearts, always remember Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. And live like that. So he took it to the extreme, that instruction that he got from Mahaprabhu. And at first, he was getting money still from his family. Because, you know, when you join the Hare Krishna movement, and, you know, and your brahmacharis and your parents, maybe they still send money or something like that. So he was doing making an opulent feast for all the devotees, inviting all the devotees to come take prasadam all the time. Then after a while, he stopped taking money from his parents. No more connection. Then outside of the Jagannath temple, there's a place where devotees, Vaishnavas, they can beg a little something so they can subsist and then go on with their bhajan. So he was doing that. But then he stopped. Mahaprabhu heard he stopped going there to that place to beg. And he said, why did he stop? And he said, well, he was thinking it's the mentality of a prostitute, that one person may give me something. Maybe that person he'll give, maybe he won't. And some expectation can be there in the mind that, that person's good, this person's bad, making designations. So he stopped doing that also. No more dependence on others. So then he went, and in Jagannath Puri, there's 54 offerings, gigantic offerings a day to Lord Jagannath. He eats everything by his glance. He leaves everything. Then that prasadam gets distributed everywhere, all over Jagannath Puri and all over the world, practically. It goes out. All the prasadam. So then any rice that was left over, they give to the cows. And the cows will eat that rice. But then there's some parts of the rice the cows won't eat. And then that rice, it washes down out of where the cows eat, down into a little pool. So Raghunath Das, he would go and collect up that rice. And it was starting to rot on the outside, so he'd clean off the outside, and the inner core of the rice, there was something left over in this prasadam. He put it in a little pot, and that's what he would eat. So one day, Swarup Damodar, he came by, and he saw that that's what Raghunath Das Goswami was eating for his sustenance. So he took some of that. And he said, why don't you share this with the others? Why don't you share this nectar? And Mahaprabhu also came. And he also saw that Raghunath was eating. He also took something. Swarup Damodar tried to restrain him, but Mahaprabhu took that as if it was nectar. So Tyakvatura Mashesha Mandalapati Shrinim Sada Tuchavat. All the Goswamis, as Vipul Prabhu was pointing out too, when one becomes attracted by Krishna, by the beauty of Krishna, there's something so attractive when one comes around the devotees and you begin to hear about Lord Chaitanya, you begin to hear about Krishna and experience for yourself this awakening that all is possible now. We're on probation. In the animal forms of life, we're in jail. You can't do anything. If you're a bird, you're going to fly around, sit in the tree, and make your noise. Whatever noise you're allotted, that's what you get to do. Squirrels do what squirrels do. They don't get to break out of that. But human beings, you know, you see the scientists, they're thinking, let's go to the moon. Let's go to the bottom of the ocean. Let's go all around the world. They're building everything because there's some impetus in the human form of life because we're on probation. The conscience is beginning to awake. We have some idea that you could do anything. This is the feeling of the soul, actually. I can do anything. It's unlimited. I can go to the, let's go to the edge of the universe. You know, so everyone's thinking like that. And it's true. In the human form of life, actually, we're giving a little slack. You know, probation, they actually let you out of jail. But then, of course, you have to check in regularly. You know, they're watching you. What's he going to do? He can't associate with other criminals because then you'll go back to jail. If you break the law again, you go back to jail. You know, but you still have freedom. You can go out. You can mix in society. You can do all kinds of things. So we're on probation in the human form of life. We have the opportunity. There's some freedom there. And from that situation, we can actually attain the highest position of life. This is why it's so exciting. And we come around devotees, and if we hear that vibration, we see others that have that spirit, and we feel it from them, then, and we also pick that up, then the material life becomes insignificant. All the things I thought before that were actually important to me, they become unimportant. In fact, then I start thinking, how can I do those things without becoming entangled and get more time for devotional service? This happened. Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, they were very much entangled because they were working for a king. They were running a kingdom. In fact, the king wasn't doing much. The king doesn't do much. He just has his ministers do everything. They do all the secretarial work and all the diplomacy and all these kinds of things. And he just, oh, very good. Okay, give me the report. And so when they decided to opt out, the king became very upset about it. Rupa Goswami, he opted out. He hired all these Brahmins to come to his house to read Srimad Bhagavatam. And then he said, I'm sick. He called in sick. And finally, the Nawab, he sent his physician to the house, looked around, and he goes, he's not sick, sir. He's in there with 50 Brahmins reading the Bhagavatam. So the Nawab himself came to see Rupa Goswami and said, huh? What are you doing? It was Sanatan Goswami. And Sanatan said that I can no longer do my duty for you. You know, the king was going off to do some battle in Orissa. And he said, you're going to give pain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I can't participate in your program anymore. So he put him in, so the Nawab put him in jail. And it's mentioned also, Rupa Goswami, when he before he left, became so eager to get out, and Mahaprabhu gave him and Sanatan Goswami a verse saying that just like a housewife, when she has a paramour, she has a lover somewhere else besides her husband, and then she begins thinking all day long how to do her duty so nicely that no one will detect how she's thinking all the time. So he said the same way, you go on with your work, but still, just in your heart of hearts, always remember Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And you know, it took Rupa Goswami 1 year to disentangle himself from that situation. Chaitanya Charitamrita mentions 1 year to finish the paperwork, to distribute his wealth and to family members, to the different local temples and everything like that, and to decamp and get out, 1 year to get out of that situation. But that's how devotees feel when they come to devotional service and their intelligence awakens, their desire to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then, Tyakvaturnamashesha Mandalapati Shrenim Sada Tuchavat. These Goswamis, even though they were from aristocratic backgrounds, they gave up everything to come. So this is in the awakening, and this is the agenda of Krishna to have us reawaken, and therefore he helps us if we desire to reawaken. And if we take to it seriously and we ask Krishna for help, he'll help us to reawaken. He sends help in many, many different ways to assist us so that we can fully awaken and take to full devotional service. And therefore, Bhagavad Gita is there. Srimad Bhagavatam is there. He sends the Association of Devotees. He sends various kinds of spiritual masters to assist us. He is there within the heart, directing us. And all these things become the greatest, it becomes the greatest journey and project of life to go back home, back to Godhead, upon understanding that this material world's going on, being created, recreated over and over again. And also, it's urgent. There's an urgency here because, as mentioned, this it's created and recreated again and again. This verse from Bhagavad Gita 9.7 is, what is it? Sarva bhutani kontaya prakritim yant. No. Sarva bhutani kontaya prakritim yanti mam kalpakshay punastani kalpado visrajamyaham. Sarva bhutani kontaya. Okay, so it means it's being created and therefore, if we don't take advantage within a certain amount of time, then we lose the opportunity. So human form of life means, you know, we're given this remarkable machine. I was standing last night, I was picking out a book from the bookshelf, and I could feel my heart beating. And then I was thinking, like, what's keeping it going? You know, it just struck me that I take it for granted 24 hours a day that the heart just beats. Here I am, I'm walking around, I'm breathing and all these things, and my heart's beating, but who's making it beat? I have no control over it at all. Nor do I have control over my digestion, nor do I have control over my breath, or whether I can see or not see, or even my equilibrium. Equilibrium is such an important thing. You know, there's a balance, like a gyroscope in your middle ear, that's a remarkable device that just helps us to see things clearly. I mean, the world's spinning around the sun, we're spinning, the earth's spinning, everything's moving, but still we're able to balance. You can stand on one leg and you'll go like this and, you know, there's a complete balance. I take that for granted, that's going on all the time. It's a great gift, this human body. So therefore, Prabhupada says about this, that when we have that opportunity, when we've been given such a great vehicle, which is compared to the boat in the Bhagavatam, Rideham Ajam Sulabam Sudurlabam, Plavam Sukalpam Guru Karnavardam, compares to a boat that's equipped to cross over. So Prabhupada says that that's just like when you go into battle and you have a chariot and you have all your weapons, you keep using them the whole time that you're in battle until the battle is won. Don't stop. Use them to your full advantage in the battle. And don't stop using them and become defeated. Don't put your weapons down. So realize that you have this full facility in human form of life, that the Shastra is being given as a saving vibration to bring us back to Godhead, and take full advantage, and Krishna will help from within the heart. Om Tat Sat, Hare Krishna. Gaur Premanande, Hare Hare Bol. Comments, yes.
I don't know if my question is relevant or no, but we just talked about how Raghunath Prabhuji just left his home and he was just going crazy, and even though he was married, he was not fulfilling his duties. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that don't go crazy and just come to me when's the right time. Mm-hmm. I mean, what does he mean by come to me when is the right time and don't go crazy? Like, is he asking him to fulfill all the four ashrams which the society has been given, or like, what does he mean by coming back to me at the right time?
Yeah, that's a good question. Bhagavatam answers this. tava karmana kurvita nanirvidyeta yavata matkata shravanadova shudayavana jayate. And this verse that Malini's looking up, and we'll have in just a second, from the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, says, as long as tavat karmana kurvita nanirvidyeta yavata matkata shravanadova, until one has awakened one's taste for hearing and chanting, one must go on with performing one's duties. That means that Raghunath Das Goswami had fully awakened his taste for hearing and chanting. And this is an individual thing, because there's a way in which we can maintain material desires and hold ourselves back from fully surrendering in devotional service. That's one side. In other words, I might think, oh, I'm going too far too fast, therefore I'll hold back something. And on the other side, I might prematurely forge ahead and give up, you know, some responsibilities. And Narada Muni says that of the two, tyakvasadharmam chananam bhujam harer bhujana pakvo tapateta doyadi, he says if one is a pakva, or he's not quite ripe yet, but gives up some of his material duties and takes to devotional service, neglects those things, because devotional service is so important that there's no loss for that person. And whatever advancement he or she makes in that endeavor to push ahead in devotional service will be kept. Whereas if someone maintains one's material occupation and perfects it, but doesn't take to devotional service, what did he or she gain? He didn't get anything. So of the two, better to err on the side of giving up and taking to devotional service. But this guideline is given, tavat karmana kurvita, nanirvidyeta yavata, that until one has full taste for devotional service, what will you be able to maintain by giving up your material occupation? Therefore, it requires some good guidance. That's what Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das took, was guidance about when to come, how to do it, how to, you know, integrate into devotional service. So we should understand through taking help from Shastra, Guru Shastra, Sadhu and Shastra, how to adjust our life in such a way that we can take as full advantage of devotional service as possible without getting tipped over. We should live a balanced life, says the Bhagavatam. Kamasya nendriya pritir labo jivate yavata jivasya tatva jignasya narto yascheha karmabi. Life's desire should be towards inquiring about the absolute truth. So that means we should arrange our life in such a way that we can inquire fully and take full advantage of the association without getting out of balance. Yes.
If a child is obliged to take care of his parents in their old age, he should not forget that, right? I mean, even though he's engaged into devotional service, but he should take care of his parents in the old age. Or
it depends on the situation, because sometimes there's a way in which someone might... we've seen sometimes, you know, devotees get go to take care of their parents and then they give up their devotional service. Yeah, definitely there should be a balance. It's a very important thing, you know, to fulfill one's material obligations. But especially for devotees, there's an opportunity at every step for those who are strong in devotional service to be able to take care of parents, to be able to take care of material obligations. Because we've seen, some practical stories. Keshava Bharati Maharaj, when he was living in India, fully engaged in devotional service, and then his mother, who was the only one left, and she had no other help. She got Alzheimer's, and then she got cancer also. She didn't have much time left. So he flew back from India, and he comes from a small little town up in Northern California, so he went there to take care of his mother. and conservative town. He showed up in his dhoti and, you know, in his devotional attire and things like that. And at first, everyone in the town thought, you know, oh, great, he's coming here to exploit his dying mother or something like that. Or they didn't know who he was or, you know, what planet he came from. But gradually, because of his dedication to his mother and her final months taking care of her, not only did his mother became a devotee and took shelter of Krishna near the end, but also many, many people in the town attached to the idea of devotional service and saw how nice devotees were by his own example. So devotees, when they go to take care of social situations, there may be weddings you have to go to and things like this. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that for grihasthas who have all these social duties to perform, actually, in one way, it's a very important kind of preaching because sannyasis, they don't go to these functions generally. They don't go to weddings and bar mitzvahs and all these things. But grihasthas do, and when they do, it's an opportunity for them to spread Krishna consciousness. I've seen practically, yeah?
So basic bottom line or basic thing is that we have to follow the karma yoga, like whatever you do in this material world, like whatever, like if I go to work or if I have to go to take care of my parents, then we have to keep Krishna in mind and then do it. That means that we are balancing. Just like you said that if we go to weddings or any social occasion, then we have to spread Krishna consciousness, and that's what you are trying to say.
Yeah. Okay. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mama nudyata. Krishna says this in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. While you're doing your duty, you should also think of me. So whatever duty we have, which we still have to attend to, we must go on with our, equally strongly, we must go on with our duty of chanting Hare Krishna. And the main thing is, bottom line, is don't give up your sadhana. You get your sadhana and you keep it in all circumstances, and then vidyam cha yas tad vedo bayam saha avidya yam ratum tirtva vidya yam ratum ashnute, says the Sri Upanishad. One who can learn the process of nescience and transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. So talking about bottom lines is that really we can't artificially get out of our karma. You know, we can't just renounce certain things and say, you know, I'm just going to walk away from it, because we have a proclivity towards it anyway. It's natural. That's what Krishna told Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, that if you shirk your duty at this point, he said, you're going to go act like a kshatriya somewhere else. You think you're going to stop being a kshatriya and go off into the forest with a begging bowl or something like that. You know, you'll end up fighting some demon or, you know, you're a fighter. That's your nature. So he said, go along with your nature, but at the same time, you know, do your duty and remember me all the time. You know, practically, I've found in my life that you go through certain stages. I've gone through certain stages in my life according to the age of my body. And looking back on it, it's like, why did I do that? Why did I do this? You know, it's like unavoidable. But because of being connected to Krishna consciousness throughout those, of not stopping doing my sadhana during all those different periods of time, they became beneficial, actually. And now when I look back at them, I see them as, you know, they give me insight. And when I see others in those ages, you know, when I'm counseling other devotees and someone comes to me who's 28 years old, I think, I know what it's like to be 28. I was 28. I know what it's like to be a 28-year-old devotee. I was there, and I feel for you, you know, because I've seen it. I've been there. I did it. I went through it, you know. And so there's, you have to go through life and experience it, but you go on with your devotional service, and it all comes together by Krishna's arrangement. Stick to the process in all circumstances, mm-hmm. And it's possible. And if it's not possible because of some kind of a social arrangement or something like that, then that's when you want to start adjusting. And sometimes, I mean, because this is the surrender process, means accept things favorable, reject things unfavorable. Someone says, well, you know, they just asked me to work two shifts. Now that means, you know, 9 in the morning till 12 at night, 12 at night till 9 in the morning. And, you know, sorry, I can't chant my rounds anymore. No, don't do it. Get a new job. You know, move to a new country. Go to another planet. Whatever you have to do. But keep, you know, keep in, you got to keep, you have to stick to devotional service. Make that your priority. And you know, okay, you still have to earn money, but do it some other way. You won't die.
Thorough and insightful explanation. But Krishna also says some things in the Bhagavad Gita. I mean, it's directly to this point. And it's in the third chapter. Because the third chapter is all about karma yoga, right, and duty. So Krishna, he's, let's see, like in text 16, third chapter, he says, "My dear Arjuna, one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice thus established by the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sin." Right? Living only for the satisfaction of the senses, such a person lives in vain. So there's all these duties that are given, you know, take care of your parents and all that. Then right in the next verse he says, "But for one who takes pleasure in the self," this is similar to the verse that Prabhupada quoted from the 11th canto, "one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and one who is satisfied in the self only," no more material proclivities, yeah, "fully satiated, for him there's no duty." So it's the same thing. As long as you're materially attached, that duty is like your anchor that will keep you from going astray, really, and keep you from living in vain. You have to fulfill that duty. But if you're a self-realized soul, you're not really obligated to do that duty. But he doesn't end there. He says, so you may be self-realized, you may not have any duty that you really have to perform anymore, but still you should do it. Text 18, "A self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties, nor has he any reason not to perform such work. Nor has he any need to depend on any other living being." He's not, you know, he's inner-directed. But ultimately, he says, you know, you should perform your duty just like you were an attached person, but remain detached.
And another verse from the Bhagavad Gita, which is to this point, "Kaina manasa buddhya kevala indriya rapi yoginam api siddhanam," what is it? "Sangyam tyakma pashudhaye," that Krishna says that the self-realized people, the yogis, they act with the body, the mind, and the senses, just like everybody else acts with the body, mind, and senses, but they do it for purification, to purify themselves, so the work takes on a completely different quality. And the other evidence from the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam on the positive side of, you know, there's two kinds of work. Work when we're obligated, which we are. We have debts. As Karabhajana Muni says, "Devarshi bhutatnan rinam pitrinam nakinkaro nayam rani charajan sarvatmana ya sharanam sharanyam gato mukundam parihritakartam." And that is, along with our birth, we're already debtors. So if we don't pay our debts, then it's unseemly, and it's also illegal, and we also have to, you know, pay for that. However, sarvatmana ya sharanam sharanyam, if one is fully surrendered to Krishna and gives up everything, and gives his whole soul to Krishna, he's no longer obligated to anybody. Those obligations are no longer there. And so it relates to this third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that one who is self-realized, in other words, one who has understood that I'm not really part of this world, well, where does he go? His consciousness goes to devotional service, to Krishna. You have to have some positive engagement. Sarvatmana yasharanam sharanyam. He becomes so eager to serve Krishna that ultimately it's like pouring milk into a glass of ink. And the more you pour, the more the ink comes out, and then after a while there's only milk in the glass and no more ink. So as we pour devotional service into the glass of our life over and over again, then gradually whatever other kinds of obligations and things that we have, they're no longer there because we're fully absorbed in devotional service. This should happen in course of time. Yes, Sri Govinda. Okay.
It's basically related to this only. Like, I just want to narrate this. When I was little, I was in school. I was a good student, but sometimes I used to get tired of exams and all. And then my dad will always say that if you will get tired, you are trying to run away from your duties, trying to escape, and you're procrastinating, and Krishna doesn't like it. So does that mean that if we give up everything, Krishna won't like it? Or I mean, I'm just confused, like how to...
We actually never give up everything. We only accept so many things that we have nothing else to do. It's true. I mean, it's a life of devotional service. There's no such thing as giving up everything. I was with Radhanath Maharaj in Los Angeles, and he was telling me this story about these yogis who live in caves. And he went to visit some of them to interview them because he lived with them for a little while. And then so he said he went up there and all the caves were closed because the government closed them down, put locks on them and stuff like that. But one yogi he went to visit, and he was in some guest house somewhere nearby. He was staying there, and while he was talking to him, there was some sound coming, and the yogi started opening all these bags, and way inside one bag there was a cell phone, and it had some disco music coming out of it. That was the ringer. Anyway, it was just, the point is that there is no giving up everything. We always have everything. In fact, this is brought up in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, in which Shukadev Goswami is mentioning that the residents of Vraja, they have everything. They have houses, they have children, they have cows, they have pots and pans and all these kinds of things. But all of them are for Krishna's service. And then Shukadev Goswami says that as long as we see our family members as ours and not Krishna's, as long as we see all our possessions as ours and not Krishna's, then they're like hand shackles and foot shackles. They keep us bound to the world. And as soon as we see that actually they belong to Krishna, like you could be married, and if you have a wife and you think, oh, my wife is mine, I'm very attached to my wife. Or you can think, you know, my wife is a servant of Krishna, how can I assist her? Or vice versa. And then it's no longer an entanglement. So, you know, we don't give up anything. But the more we accept devotional service in our life, the more it comes in, and that becomes our duty. That's what we have to do. That becomes our career. And there's nothing else to do after a while. In fact, it becomes so consuming 24 hours a day, that's all you have to do. That's all you have to think about. And there is no other thing. And really, Krishna maintains you. If someone is in that phase of life, sarvatmana yash sharanam sharanyam, means if they've given up everything for Krishna, Krishna won't maintain them. He's maintaining every living being. He won't maintain the person who's completely surrendered. So, you know, although we say giving up this, giving up that, we actually never give up anything. It's not our nature. We only accept other things. So you just think.
Thank you
all.
So much. I mean, yeah, it was a very beautiful explanation.
Okay, good. Hare Krishna.
I hope my question was not very dumb.
We give $100 for dumb questions. Let me see if I have 100. No. It was an excellent question. Sri Govinda, you have something? A little bit more, a little further.
Sarvatmaya saranam sharanyam. Where did that line exactly happens? I mean, like for example, we heard of one pastor and some devotees are taking flowers from mother's gardens. So Papa said we should not be doing that. I mean, we have to still obey the moral laws and everything. But if the soul is completely surrendered to the Supreme Lord, he's not obliged by these things. So where does that line comes, like...
Well, a devotee doesn't cause harm to other living entities and is also very much aware not to to offend others. You know, even in normal dealings, it's not that because now I have no obligation, I step on people and things like that. or you know, I can steal, and you know, there's no result for that. That's not the idea. In fact, devotee becomes hypersensitive to how he or she is moving in the world. And like devotees, you know, even in normal circumstances, like when we walk into a room, if you bump into something, don't devotees always do like this? Like, you know, you just brush against somebody else's body, and then Hare Krishna, you show respect. Yastu sarvani bhutani atmani vanu pashyati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tatona vijugupsate. The devotee's always aware of Krishna everywhere. In fact, you know, like Prabhupada told us when we're cleaning, he said, don't move things around with your feet. Even if it's a wastebasket, you're sweeping the floor, and you say, I'll just push this with my foot out of the way. But that's Krishna's thing. You know, you become conscious that these things all belong to Krishna, they're being used in Krishna's service, so you don't kick things around, you're very much aware. What to speak of other living entities, what to speak of other people's gardens. You know, we don't go in and steal and then think like, well, we're doing this for Krishna. But it's the opposite, actually. Devotees become so much aware of, and other living beings also become aware of that. And therefore, it's mentioned in the prayers by Srinivasacharya about the six Goswamis of Vrindavan that they were, even the gentle and the ruffians were favorable towards them. You know, those the Hell's Angels were favorable. Everyone becomes favorable because they feel that coming from devotees, that they're respectful, that they have this feeling of they're seeing everything as Krishna's property, and that they give respect to all other living beings. So it's not a carte blanche that, you know, I can do anything I want because now I'm surrendered to Krishna. Very much the opposite, actually. Yeah, okay, one more question.
I hope it's that. But speaking about creation, maintenance, and annihilation, my question is that if the ultimate goal is destruction, then, I mean, why did God thought about creating this world and thought about, like, making these many bodies and forms and, like, what's the plan? I mean, what's his plan?
A short, easy question, right? I was driving down the street the other day, and I became aware that there were, I saw one police car when I was driving down California Avenue, and then I saw another one turn in the corner. And I just started thinking about the police. And why are they there? They have to be, because to have a society, to have any kind of normalcy, you have to have police. Why? Why do you have to have police? Yeah, why do you have to have law and order? I mean, there's bad people around. I mean, people just fly off the handle. And, you know, they were raised by parents who didn't care. I saw two parents yesterday when I was walking down Burlingame Avenue, walking with their little kid, and both of them were smoking cigarettes. I mean, it's 2009, and, you know, all the information about secondhand smoke and stuff. Both of them smoking cigarettes, and the kid's right in the middle of them. Come on, Schnicky, let's go. And, you know, they're both smoking, and I'm just thinking now all kinds of people are raised and they might teach their kids, you know, it's okay to steal or they don't watch them or whatever. And they grow up and you have to have police. It's just the way society is. And society means that people can do what they like to a point. There's you can do whatever you want except for things that encroach on other people's. That's how we have a society. That's why we have lawyers. We have laws. We set these things up. So Krishna also gives us he gives us laws. Laws are mercy, actually, because it gives us a way to regulate ourselves and to rectify. Without a clear sense of law, we can't be rectified. Now, how do we come into that situation? We have independence. Bottom line and simple thing is because we're made in the stamp of Krishna. We're sparks of Krishna, mentioned in this verse. Just as Krishna has full independence, we have minute independence. We're made with his stamp. And that stamp is, he's Abhijna Swarat, he's fully independent, he's fully conscious. We're also conscious, and we want to see everything, do everything, play, do whatever we want to do, but we can do so in a limited way, unless we connect with Krishna. And then we can, through him, we can actually enjoy unlimitedly. But also, our our freedom is limited because we're tiny. We can't do whatever we want unlimitedly. But when we misuse that independence, then there's a realm in which we live, which is the material world for rectification. Because we have the opportunity to live either in the spiritual world using our independence properly or to live in the material world, which means misuse of independence. It means kind of venturing away from our constitutional position to try to enjoy like Krishna does. And therefore, we're given this realm. And this is a realm of rectification. At the same time, it's mentioned in this verse, Krishna is not unkind. It's not that he just puts us in a hellish condition, but he actually fulfills our desire. So there's a way in which he's fulfilling our desire. He's given us a virtual world to play in according to our dreams. So I have desires, so Krishna says, okay, I fulfill all your desires. It's not possible. I can't be Krishna. I can't have the same things. But he gives a virtual world. I'm practically like that. I can have whatever I want here, can't I? Oh, but really, he does fulfill our desires in this world. If you want to be a Brahma, you can be a Brahma. If you want to, go to certain planets, you can go to higher planets. You can get whatever you want in this world. Krishna is fulfilling desires of every living entity. Sapariyajak shukra makayam avranam asnavinam shudam apapavidam kavirmanishi paribhu swayambur. It's mentioned how he's fulfilling the desire of every living entity since time immemorial. So we've got the wrong desire, that's all. We've got a desire that's detrimental to our actual interests. So Vedas come, Krishna doesn't interfere. He keeps fulfilling our desire. But he then comes and canvasses and says, look, you'll be better off if you do this. And he gives us the opportunity by our own free will to choose that and to do it. And then we become happy. There's some rectification. Puja?
If it's so easy to, if Krishna fulfills a desire, it's so that to go to any other planet or Brahmaloka, if he fulfills it so easily, why doesn't going to Vaikuntha or Goloka, why doesn't he fulfill that so easily?
Did I say easy?
No, sorry.
Not necessarily easy. It's available. And, if you want to learn to play the violin, you got to put a little work into it. But actually, it's much easier to go back to Godhead on a relative scale than it is to stay in the material world or to try to achieve anything here. It's such a pain to try to get anything in this world, isn't it? I mean, I'm starting to give up on the whole idea. Like, really, we should become unglued from the whole idea of this thing. And it's a relief. After a while, you just go, I give up. It's like, it's not worth it. And then what do you have? If you have a life of devotional service, it's like, I'll just do that. That's much easier. I'll just be a servant. How about that? And Krishna, yeah, you got it. It's easier. Working in the material world, maintaining the status quo is difficult. You have to, put on so much pretense and even maintaining this body. It's like, I am this body. You look in the mirror and go, like, I'm my body, Like, oh, God, it doesn't look so good. What do I do? You have to take care of it. You have to make sure that it's, up to par, and it's always falling apart. People always, now in America, the big thing is obesity. Everyone's always fighting with the weight, your weight goes up, weight goes down, and it's a constant hassle just to deal with the body. But surrendering to Krishna, that's relatively easy, because Krishna wants us to surrender. He'll give us full facility when we do surrender. And it's sweet surrender. We should just surrender, and then we'll be happy. Akurnath Prabhu?
I just had a question about this, in the purport about how the living entities are divided into Nitya Badha and Nitya Mukta. And I'm wondering, because, one is always eternally forgetful of Krishna and one is always eternally remembering Krishna. But most of the people I know, they seem to, be sometimes remembering Krishna. At least a little bit remembering Krishna. So how is it that we understand that there's just these two categories?
Well, we take to devotional service. In the beginning, of course, we still have the residual effect of our existence in the material world. So we have a sadhana deha. And then you take initiation in devotional service. Krishna becomes pleased with you, actually, Shastra says, and then he gives you full facility because you've made a stand and you're saying, this is what I'm going to do now. And now you're not fully there yet, but you do have a unique kind of body now. It's not a material body anymore because you've taken a devotional service and you're also not completely free. You're not liberated. So therefore you have what's called the sadhana deha. You have a practitioner's body. And just like, say, remember Steve Young from the 49ers? He was a famous football player. So he came to the San Francisco 49ers in the 80s, and he was very there was that team. They won the Super Bowl several times. That's the big thing for football in America. And but Steve Young didn't play, but he still got a trophy. He still got a Super Bowl ring. So when you join up with devotional service and you say, you know, okay, I'm on the team now. You may not be a full player yet, but your team's going to the Super Bowl, you still get the ring, you know. So, you know, we get on the team, you know, get on the team, you get the uniform, you get the whole thing, and it's like, oh, yeah, okay, he's one of these guys, he's not perfect, you know, but he's, you know, he's maybe not playing full-time, but, you know, you may even be on the disabled list. They have that in baseball, you know, somebody... They're injured. They're still on the team, but they keep him on the team for a whole year, you know, while he's getting repaired. But if they win the World Series, he gets the trophy too. You know, you win. So we this is the mercy of the disciplic succession. You know, we're not Paramahamsas, but we're following the Paramahamsas, and it's just as good. This is what Shastra is saying. That's very exciting. You know, Bejare Muniyo Tagre. Bhagavantamad hoksajam satvam vishuram shemaya kalpante inutaniha. Anu means to follow. So it says these great souls, they're liberated and they worship Lord Vishnu fully. But if you follow them, even if you're not that, if you're following them with full intention, you get the same result. You're eligible for the same thing. So you get that. So we will, it is considered a liberated condition. Because you're connected, because you're following. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, jai, go premanande, hari hari bo.